What's going on, bro? How's the week been?
It's been good. Just super busy getting my building out a new coaching program in a gym in Dedham, and so I've been like running around crazy building that, teaching a bunch of classes, all that. It's been good.
Yeah, how about fair you? Enough. Yeah, all good. Busy as fuck at the new job, but everything's going well, so I can't complain that much.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
What did you think of the fight? What did you think of the fights last night?
The fights last night, pretty solid. I thought that it was really nice to watch Brandon Royval pick up a win, because I remember his first fight over in Vegas at the Apex. He was a bit emotional when he beat Tim Elliott. And fighting a guy like Kai Kara France, who comes from a really tough gym, and he's a really talented flyweight. And that fight was a fucking hurricane, dude. You watched it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like
I did. Yeah, that was a super impressive fight to watch.
Fucking right hand gets dropped, stands up, spinning back elbow, illegal knee, pulls guard.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. I mean, I was so happy that the illegal knee didn't result in any sort of stop. I mean, it did seem like when they showed the replay that it may have been more his quad that hit. It had like a direct shot with the knee, so I mean that was good, because you also don't want to allow a foul, and it was a foul.
Good referee.
Definitely. But yeah, that was such a fun fight.
Yeah, Diego Sanchez getting beat up for like the 80th time in a row in the prelims. I think it's time for him to hang it up.
Yeah, I mean, or at least no longer at 170 and getting back with a real coach. Like, so much like weird drama around that.
Yeah.
Like, so with like this weird karate guy who like...
He's not a karate guy. He's like a mental health coach, dude.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he has no martial arts background.
Who ironically tried to like get into it with Matt Serra. If Matt Serra wouldn't lay him the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
I forget who was over there training with Diego who made the comments, but some crazy video came out of like his coach chasing them around the cage with a knife or something.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've heard all sorts of, like, fuckery coming out of, like, that camp.
Yeah.
And it's all ironic, too, that he left Jackson Wink for him. But now, Jackson Wink, though obviously one of the most reputable gyms in the world, has had a share of controversy. But he was, like, championing their cause when Cowboy came out and talked about why he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And then he leaves for this fucking guy. It's like, dude, like, it's like maybe like go to AKA or something.
You know? Yeah, go somewhere where you're actually going to get some decent fucking coaches. Because when you're on the tail end of your career like that, like I guess a prime example that we can segue into is guys like Jan Blachowicz, where he was moving around to a lot of gyms and he kind of attributed a lot of his losses to the moving around and trying to get to that next level and not being where what made him comfortable, essentially. And that guy's 37. I think Diego is around the same age also. And he's now the new light heavyweight champion of the world. So it goes to show you that even with longevity, I even think that they might have the same amount, if not within 5 or 6 fights of each other, the same experience. So it just goes to show the two different styles of doing things. You've got guys like Diego that at the tail end of the career, instead of staying somewhere that's comfortable and like you said, vouching for a team like Jackson Wink, he moves over to this I don't even remember his fucking name, dude, but this guy does not he should not be allowed to have any sort of coaching credentials at all.
Well that's the thing, is like the commissions are supposed to kind of regulate that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean it's sort of like you know, when Mike Perry was having his girlfriend quarter. You know, it's
fair enough.
It's like there needs to be, like, especially if I need to pay money to get a quarter's license, that there, which I do, no matter where your quarter is.
Yeah.
And, you know, there should be some standard criteria that need to be fulfilled in order to be able to do that. And, you know, otherwise, it's just you're clearly just looking for my money.
Yeah, it's fucking insane, dude. That guy has no business being in the cage, but to segue into better things, I guess. Super stoked to see Jan Blachowicz win the title. I think that win is completely legitimate.
Oh, absolutely. I think Reyes came in with a not awesome game plan, because I think he took the critique to heart that he kind of blew his wad in the Jones fight, and so I think he was trying to pace himself more.
Yeah.
But then he didn't end up letting go until he was already pretty fucked up, because Blachowicz just, you know, went after him that whole fight. I mean, he looked awesome. I mean, Reyes didn't necessarily look bad, but he was just having a hard time finding the gas pedal.
Yeah, we're talking about a guy that took John Jones 5 rounds, arguably won the fight by a couple of other people's opinions, right? But holy shit, dude. Like, I've never seen someone in my life land a body kick and instantly cause a welt like the one that Blachowicz caused on that right side of Dominic Reyes' back, dude. That was fucking gnarly.
Dude, that looked like a third-degree burn. Yeah, you know what I mean? Dude. It was crazy. Looked like fucking Freddy Krueger's face was on the lap of Dominic Reyes.
That,
like, holy shit.
Gnarly. Absolutely gnarly. I saw that kick land, and from one camera angle to the next, I was like, what the fuck just happened to that dude's back, man? And just staring at – I was just, like, staring at it for about 3 minutes until leading into the second round, dude.
Me and a couple of guys I was watching the fight with are trying to figure out, like, what could cause that. I mean, because I've seen that happen to legs after taking, you know, a couple dozen leg kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just, like, blood clots, and it, like, it's gross. But, like, I've never seen what happened, like, so instantly there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a test of the power of Jan Blachowicz, and he had a great strategy. He was very patient. Every single time Dominic Reyes tried to take the fight to him, he just saw the holes. He connected with the right punches, and that legendary Polish power was on full display on Saturday night, dude. It was sick.
Definitely. I mean, I definitely slept on Blachowicz a bit.
Yeah.
And I think part of that was because I never really noticed him until he fought Rockhold.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, so the guy's getting a title shot out of beating a couple of geriatrics in Jacare and Luke Rockhold. And I know he beat Corey Anderson, I think.
Yeah, he slept Corey Anderson in the first round.
Yeah, that was like the big win. But it's like, okay, but are we expecting this guy to be Dominic Reyes?
Yeah. I mean, sadly, that's like just kind of what the light heavyweight division had gone to, right, with Jones dominating everyone. Yeah. It's like, let's try to mix this up. Let's put Weidman in the mix. And then Hayes got the title shot from beating Weidman, and then Rockhold and all this other crazy shit. So I'm just happy that there's a new champion in town. Hopefully that it stays purely light heavyweight, and it's going to make things a little more interesting.
Agreed. I mean, you know, because now that Jones is gone, because we saw interesting things happen both at 185 during the Silva era, 170 during the GSP era.
Yeah.
For having such a dominant champion makes everybody else look bad.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see now that 205 is blown so wide open, just how it's going to look when the dust clears.
Yeah, 100%, dude. And the main event, I mean, hats off to Adesanya. Personally, I don't think Paulo Costa showed up at all. I think that there was he was in his own head. You could see it from the very beginning with all the shit talking, and it just looked weird. Like, it was a weird, weird fucking fight.
So the vibe I got was, it seemed like that very first kick, you know, he had Costa just being like, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, Stylebender has a very tricky style. You know, he has footwork similar to, like, a Lyoto Machida, that he, like, glides on the outside, and he's almost fencing with you. Like, he'll dart in, go up above them, then go right back out. And when you're both shorter than somebody, you know, and he had like a almost comically shorter reach.
Yeah.
Than
T-Rex arms, it looked like.
Exactly. And you're slower. That could be a heartbreaking fight. I mean, I feel like Kelvin Gastelum had laid out a decent framework for how to potentially beat Stylebender, where he just sort of almost kept his forehead in Stylebender's chest the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, with like ripping, looping shots and all that, which, yeah, you get punished for it. Obviously, Gaffer lost that fight. But I think Costa needed to be willing to do something like that, like really work on cutting off the cage and, because even when he got Stylebender against the fence, Izzy's so good at, like, quickly clinching and throwing knees and then starting to punish you for it and then pivoting out that he didn't capitalize on. So it's also easy for me to fucking talk shit from my couch, you know. But like, you know, there was just like, you know, he just got outclassed. I mean, I know a lot of people have noticed what looks like Gyno on Izzy's, you know, on Izzy's pack. You know, for those of you who don't know, those are the bitch tits that come from steroid abuse.
Yeah.
generally an issue with post-cycling. But even if it turned out that Israel Adesanya was all the up and up with this, you know, he was just clearly on a different level skill-wise than Paulo Costa was.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think that the Paulo Costa we saw in his last five performances just wasn't there. There was something wrong with him mentally, dude. Like, you could just, in those moments where you're up against the fence and you know that you're the bigger, stronger fighter, like, why not use that size? And especially when you have that center of gravity against a taller fighter, like, he's no slouch on the ground either. He's a black belt and he's taunting Adesanya at the press conference. Like, why don't you shoot for a takedown? Like, I understand you want to be the tough guy and throw hands and be in his face and bring that exciting fight, but at the end of the day, you're also fighting for a fucking title and your record's on the line.
I mean, I actually figured when he, you know, weighed in with his black belt, so like threw the white belt over at Stylebender, that was him saying that he was planning on grappling. And maybe that was something that he was trying to convey to Stylebender, even though I don't think anybody really thought that he was going to try to get to him.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
I don't know, maybe like, because Stylebender is really good at kind of getting in the head of the people he's with. You know, he can be kind of McGregor-ish in that regard. And yeah, I mean, Costa just could have had the gas pedal.
Yeah, absolutely.
That said, I don't think he landed a single real strike that entire fight outside of a couple of kicks. And so who knows if that would have made any difference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Izzy, he's like a new version, a new and improved version of Anderson Silva, in my opinion, with less theatrics.
Yep.
I think he really, he doesn't throw punches unless he knows the punch is going to land. He doesn't throw kicks unless he knows it's going to land. He's not exerting too much energy in the fight. And he's like you said, he's like a matador, essentially, right? He's waiting for you to come in. He's going to glide out of the way. He's going to catch you with tough shots.
Well, I mean, he was one of the best in the world in kickboxing. I mean, if anything, I'd be insulted that Paulo Costa thought he could, if I were Izzy, that thought he could stand with me. You know
75
I mean?
And 5. That's 80 fucking kickboxing fights, dude.
Yeah, like, that is ridiculous. Like, that's such an absurd, you know, it's like, and then Costa, who's giving Izzy shit for being a white belt, is some, you know, going to be, you know, it's like, dude, yeah, because he was kickboxing. That thing that you're going to try to do tomorrow with him, that's what Izzy was always doing.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I mean, like, I actually didn't even know Paulo Costa was a black belt. I mean, maybe he should have been trying to take him to the ground rather than, like, throwing his, he was, like, throwing these, like, stupid body kicks. And oddly,
and talking too much. You
know, yeah, I mean, which, honestly, I've always been a big fan of the sort of Muay Thai philosophy of not showing any expression on your face.
Sure, poker face.
Not happiness, not anger. Not nothing. Just don't let him see anything. And blank canvas. But, like, you know, the talking can be effective, you know, but you need to be doing stuff with it. There needs to be action as well.
Yeah.
If you're just trying to constantly show that something doesn't affect you while not landing anything, it just, I don't know, it makes you look weak. You know, at best, it makes you look like a douchebag. And at worst, it means you're overcompensating.
Yeah, in the words of Ryan White, he fought like a donkey. He fought like a fucking donkey.
Unfortunately, he did. And, you know, and I mean, and I like Paulo Costa. I think he is a fun fighter, and I think he can still be. Yeah, I think obviously he still is one of the very best in the world at 185.
Top five for sure.
Oh, yeah. And if we end up seeing another fight between the two, you know, hopefully he can learn some lessons and it can be more competitive. Because unfortunately, like last night, was a showcase for Stylebender.
I just thought it was, you know, wild how that finish looked almost identical to the one against Robert Whittaker, where he kind of glides out and then he hits you with that check left hook, dude, like right, like literally right across his temple, dropped him. Really solid top control, like really good ground and pound, like super solid finish. very impressive. I thought the post-fight celebration of, like, trying to doggy-style fuck Paulo Costa was a little bit too much. And I will be the first person to say that, yeah, as talented as he is as a fighter, I find him to be, like, the top three cringiest people I've ever heard speak in my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, and so, like, I like some of the stuff he says when he talks, especially, like, as a comic book slash anime nerd and stuff, he resonates.
The Naruto run celebration around the ring was pretty funny.
Exactly. I like the Rock Lee thing. It's great. But, like, that said, yeah, that I thought that was a bit over the top, especially, too, I've always felt like when you have somebody hurt, you don't then taunt them. If Costa was clearly hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm fine with that type of stuff leading into the fight, but afterwards it's supposed to be done.
Yeah, I mean, you could yell at me on the ground, whatever, but the second you try to start doggy humping me while I'm out cold on the ground, dude, then it becomes personal. Then the gang's involved.
Yeah, I mean, like, at that point, you'd be kind of an asshole. But I get too, the, like, Costa seems to be, now I don't know the whole history between Izzy and Paulo, but Costa definitely seemed to be kind of the aggressor as far as, like, the shit talk goes.
Yeah.
And maybe that, like, kind of offended Israel. But at the same time, when you know, after you have you won, you know, your hands raised, the guy's clearly hurt, it's like there's no reason to keep doing that than, like, pretending to fucking jizz on his coaches and stuff like that.
And he actually fucking said it to the coach's face. He says, "I'm gonna C-word all over your face." And that is some of the most, honestly, this guy, he makes me fucking cringe, dude. But what I heard, what I read on MMA Junkie was that Paulo Costa and Izzy had, like, a brush up in the hotel, like, nothing aggressive, but they had, like, a super friendly conversation where Izzy shook his hand and was like, "Hey, best of luck tomorrow," blah, blah, blah. So I think you kind of see how some of the hate is, like, self-fabricated so they can kind of get themselves into the fight and, like, market it a little bit. But I actually don't see that these two guys actually dislike each other at all.
Well, and that had always been what I heard, which is why I was surprised that Stylebender sort of kept it going after the fight. You know, because, like, honestly, like, for me, I think the cringiest part, though, was with, like, you know, Izzy was, like, when he first got in the cage, he was, like, doing his little lap around. And, like, Costa tried to, like, pretend he was going to go after him right there.
Tough guy, like, tough guy, Costa.
Yeah, so you're going to fight him in, like, 30 seconds. Be cool. Like, you know, it's like you'll have your moment.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, there was definitely, like, a lot of cringe there.
A lot of cringe. But let's backtrack, actually, because I don't think we got a chance to talk about last week's fights. Because I was unfortunately out for a little farewell.
That's true. But also, speaking of cringe, just before we
before we digress.
Did you hear that, like, McGregor had tried to fight Diego Sanchez?
Yeah, that's what Dana was saying, that he had, like, put up a couple of screenshots of some conversations they had, saying that he could kind of be the alternate for Khabib Gaethje and throwing up some other matchups in there. And then he said that he wanted to main event a Las Vegas card against Diego Sanchez, who's a guy that's, I'll say, is on a five-fight losing streak. And Dana was like, "Shut the fuck up, Connor."
Diego did get, so up until the Chiesa fight, he had, I think, two wins.
Yeah.
Like, so we got a couple. But Dana, to his credit, was like, he just, quote-unquote, won against Michel Pereira, but only because he got DQ'd. And so, like, that's just absurd. It also, too, kind of seems to prove the point that Connor isn't actually, like, interested in being, like, an actual fighter anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I heard other reports also coming out that he's scheduled to fight Manny Pacquiao sometime early next year.
I saw that, too, and it's like, I think they should both fight appropriate opponents in their own sports or do nothing. I am sick of the sideshow nonsense. And that's actually one of the things I like about Stylebender. He is a lot of the fun things about Conor McGregor without the bullshit that goes with it.
Sure. Yeah, 100%. I mean, he talks good shit. he looks good fighting. He's very smooth. Like, he's pretty much a middleweight Conor McGregor, essentially, you know?
Yeah, and he'd have, like, the martial arty type stuff to it. It's good. You know, it's like, it's fun, but, like, but then you don't have to worry about him sucker punching old men at bars or dropping trout in front of women or doing the general crazy shenanigans that Conor seems to like doing.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. Fair enough. So, backtracking to last week's card, Randy Costa looked really good.
He did. I was really happy for Randy.
Yeah, also it was nice to see Tyson Nam win. And Andre Uhl, also a really talented guy that's kind of fought around this scene as well. Fucking sick. I think all the fights went exactly the way we predicted them to go.
Yeah, generally speaking, they did. I was surprised that Kobe made Tyrant look as bad as he did. Like, Tyrant had put up less of a fight than I thought he would. Because I figured he'd at least have a couple moments.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Kobe just put it on him the entire time.
Yeah, and apparently from the pictures, he broke his fucking rib clean in half, dude. So, I mean, it was an absolute brilliant performance from Kobe's part. As much as I don't like his facade at all, you know, his, like, little, like, act that he puts on and all this MAGA shit and all this – you know, he's got to politicize everything and he's got to be on the phone with Trump and he's got to fucking do this and do that. And then what drove me even more crazy, even though I usually kind of vouch on, like, for the better part of things with Dana White, but when he said that he doesn't censor fighters and he won't censor Colby and blah, 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 that's absolutely fugazi-ass bullshit on Dana White's part. We all know that he's fucking censoring fighters, and there's been times – I mean, he won't censor the fighters, but he'll censor a guy like Dan Hardy for, you know, protesting a late stoppage. Like, I honestly think that this is just a case of Dana being Dana, and it's just so bullshit, and that kind of stuff drives me crazy. But other than
that's the thing. Because, I mean, like, as – tedious as Covington's character can be.
Yeah.
It is what kind of made Covington, I don't want to say a star, but let's say well-known.
Sure. And, fair enough.
And, like, you know, and the, you know, and also, too, there is the whole bit where Dana and Donald Trump are friends. You know, and I think that's probably why Donald called Kobe. Yeah. I admittedly, I do think it's funny that Donald seems to be, like, in on it. Or, like, you know, but it's also, too, not necessarily what I want our president doing. And actually, did you see, too, at one of his rallies, I saw it on the Underground yesterday, he actually, like, so Kamaru Usman and Jordan Masvidal were there, and he was like, hey, these guys are awesome. Like, he was like,
yeah.
And he was, like, talking to them during his rally, which, admittedly, those are two who I would not have expected to be at a Donald Trump rally.
Or Trump supporters. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Well, especially too when, like, they both claim to hate Kobe. It's like, so if nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, and so I don't know. I mean, I wonder too if that was Dana being like, "Hey, would you guys mind, like, stopping in or something?" Because, like, I do struggle to picture Masvidal and Kamaru Usman being Trump supporters.
Some weird part of me could see it, but it's nuts, dude.
Yeah.
Unreal. Mackenzie Dern looked really good against Randa Markos. I thought that was kind of a given that she was going to go in there and submit her. I mean, Randa Markos is 10-10 now. I don't really think she's top 15, top 20, top 30 material at women's strawweight.
Not going to lie to you, I did not know she was still fighting until we found out she was fighting Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, the last time I heard about her, I heard that she was, like, in an affair with Dana White, and there were some rumors going around. I don't know if it's 100% true, but Mackenzie Dern looked good nonetheless. Slick submission win. She looked really, like, I was surprised that Randa Markos decided to go into Mackenzie Dern's guard, knowing that this girl is a fucking ADCC champion, like, five-time IBJJF world champion. Like, the girl is probably one of the most decorated women's jiu-jitsu artists of all time, and, well, like, people say all the time, there's levels to this shit, and you're, like, MMA gym level grappling is not gonna even come close to what Mackenzie Dern can do. She's pretty much just fooled around with her on the ground.
Yeah, that's like the equivalent of somebody trying to stand and bang with Israel Adesanya.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the sweep looked really good. I mean, how often do you really see sweeps in MMA? Do you know what I'm saying? Like a well-executed BJJ sweep?
Absolutely. I mean, as much as I like giving Mackenzie Dern a hard time because of the fake Brazilian accent, she likes to put on the play. It's like she is an immense talent. That can't be taken away from her. And, like, she's made just about every girl she's fought look pretty silly. And that, you know, there's something to that.
100%. Obviously, it just goes to show the level of jiu-jitsu and MMA, especially women's MMA. I think that if she can – I don't know much about her striking because, obviously, all her wins in the UFC are by submission. If she can manage to be like a Damian Maya-esque fighter at strawweight and kind of just have good enough hands to be defensive and throw offensive strikes to set up takedowns and stuff like that, I think she'll be really successful.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
I just hope that she's not one of these impulsive people that kind of falls in love with throwing their hands, you know, and then just kind of switches up their strategy and ends up suffering on the wrong end of something.
Agreed. I mean, because I know she has had some success on her feet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's I you know, you always want to see fighters sort of like, you know, go home with the girl they brought to the dance.
Yeah, I hope so. I agree with that 100%, brother. The next fight was fucking wild, the Johnny Walker-Ryan Spann fight.
Yep. Oh, that was awesome. That was very
over glorified bar fight, in the words of John Jones.
100%.
Yeah. I thought Spann looked good. I think a lot of people don't understand how much he was hurt. Because I think it's one thing for you to work takedowns. It's another thing for you to work takedowns from your knees. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you know, and like you said, there's no telling what Spann was feeling in there or and all that. So like, but yeah, I mean, that fight was absolutely wild.
100%. And a lot of people were giving Johnny Walker shit for punches to the back of the head, but I rewatched that fight. I'm telling you, maybe I rewatched the finish maybe 5 times, dude. And as far as I know, is that if the fighter is moving his head while the strike is being thrown and it hits the back of the head, it's still a legal shot.
Yep, absolutely. So what the referee will say in every rules meeting is that the only time it becomes an issue is if the fighter's head is stationary and you are clearly aiming for the back of the head.
Yeah, and you if you're watching that fight back and he's landing the first 3 punches to the side of the head, and when you see Spann try to adjust and go for the takedown again, that's when you might see 1 or 2 punches hit the back, but he's clearly moving while obviously there's no intention to hit the back of the head, and those 3 elbows that he threw were clean as a whistle to the side of the head, and I thought it was a legitimate stoppage.
Absolutely. I mean, the punches to the back of the head rule is such a tricky one to enforce.
Yeah.
Because, again, they're, you know, it's like, well, yes, they're illegal. There is some gray area because there's plenty of situations where it really can't be helped. And so it's, you know, so it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, it's like the 12-6 elbow rule where, like, some guy in the commission saw a video of some karate guy, like, breaking boards and blocks of cement with 12-6 elbows, and all of a sudden it's an illegal technique. Yep. That it's mind-blowing. Yeah, I think that the rules need a little bit of adjusting, but who am I to speak? The Khamzat fight, fucking gnarly.
Dude, he is a scary fucking dude. Just holy shit. Dude, what a tough night out for Damian Maya coming up.
Like, yeah, that's a shitty like, fucking dude, fight for Damian.
It's like, he wanted Diego Sanchez. Did you give him Khamzat?
Yeah.
Fuck
that. And I think Khamzat was actually living rent-free in Gerald Meerschaert's head, dude, going into that fight.
Because
you just saw how frozen Gerald was. And fucking hell, dude. I mean, let's just talk about 3 fights in 3 months. The strike differential, dude, he has 2 fights in a row. I mean, I think he's absorbed less than 10 punches in 3 fights with 3 finishes.
Yeah,
and that knockout was fucking absolutely gnarly, dude. and he went up to middleweight. He's naturally a welterweight.
Yep. Oh, it is crazy. Absolutely crazy. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what the future is going to hold for him.
100%. I think that he will no doubt go through some adversity, but I think that with his mindset and the way he's fighting and the way his techniques are so balanced, like how good he is on the ground in comparison to how good he is with his hands, like he could very well be like I know he likes to say that he's Khamzat, but a Khabib-style-esque career, you know? I'm not Khabib, I'm Khamzat. Smish. Absolutely. I smish everyone.
Yeah, seriously.
The co-main event was pretty solid. Cerrone versus Nico Price. I thought, obviously, Cerrone had definitely lost the first round. The second and the third seemed to go more his way, but the post-fight celebration from Nico Price was absolutely mind-blowingly hilarious.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, dude, I don't know. I mean, he like, especially when you follow somebody to the point where you have a point taken away, it's like, have some humility. It's like, don't fucking cheer because you got a draw. It's like, yeah, I mean, that was tough.
I think he just admires Cerrone so much that in his eyes, it was like a W. Yeah, it was like a sick. Like, we got to fight, duke it out. Nobody lost this one. We both get paid. On to the next one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Cerrone definitely fought valiantly. And I was glad he did so well. But I would really like to see if he continues that he goes to 55 again. Because he just can't seem to hurt 170.
I agree with you. It's more volume, right?
Exactly. He doesn't have the, Lance said, his punches don't seem to have the pop on them. They do it at 170. And also, too, like, the size advantage that he would often get to enjoy at 155, he does not have at 170.
You know, yeah, 100%.
Like he's an average welterweight or a big 155er.
Yeah, I'd rather be a big 155er than a small welterweight because, I mean, that's when you kind of bridge the gap, right? Like, that's when you get
absolutely.
That's when you get guys that are massive at 170. You get guys that could literally be 205ers. Like, we're talking about guys like Anthony Johnson that used to cut down to 170 to fight you.
Yeah, I grant it very seldom successfully, but yes.
Saying, like, this is where you bridge the gap between being, like, in weight and size, especially he's tall for 155. He's lanky for 155. It works with the jiu-jitsu. It works with the strikes. He's fighting shorter guys at 155. I just don't see how it makes any sense for him to keep fighting at 170. I mean, he is older, and he wants to avoid that weight cut and the damage, et cetera. But in my opinion, I think that if he's going to keep fighting, it's got to be at 155.
I agree. I mean, you're just like when you look at the simple fact that, like, the average 155er walks around usually at the heaviest, like, 180.
Yeah.
Whereas the average 170er will walk in the high 90s.
Yeah.
You know, it's
or
like,
200s.
They did exactly. Like Johnny Hendricks, again, didn't always make it, but he would walk at 205.
Great. Yeah, he was a thick boy outside of training camp.
Dude, seriously.
Chewing tobacco, Coors Light, and smoked ribs on the barbecue.
But yeah, so I mean, I thought Cowboy looked good. You know, and I'm not obviously trying to kick him while he's down, but I would like to see him, like, because especially too, like, the older you get, the slower you get. I feel like that's when you have to really make sure everything else is dialed in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, if he were still younger, more durable, didn't have as much mileage on him, then, like, that's when, like, maybe you see what 170 has for you. But, like, now it's like, dude, I'd much rather fight the, 5'10", 155er than the 6'2", 170er.
Yeah, 100%. I think that he gave a shout to, like, potentially getting a mental health coach. And I think that from what I've seen it do to GSP's career and a lot of other guys' careers, that it's not necessarily a bad avenue, especially when you're getting older and putting more miles on. And you kind of got to be in the right headspace, where Cerrone's had that problem throughout his entire career, we can say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the most unsung parts of this game, and really sports in general, is your headspace. When you look at the difference between the good and great guys, it generally comes down to mentality. And so, you know, I think that's a good allocation of resources to be taking the time to see a mental health coach.
Yeah, 100%, man. This upcoming weekend on Sunday, we also have some more fights. Not a lot of big names on it, but I think we'll still see some talent nonetheless. On the undercard, Carlos Condit making his return against Corey McGee.
I so hope that Carlos Condit can win, because I've always been a huge Condit fan, and like, while I like McGee, I guess he's fine.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, I know Condit's had such a terrible string of performances, so I would love to see him get back in the win column. Even if like this turns out to be his last fight, it would, you know, I'd love to see him get a W and then ride off.
100%, and I wouldn't even necessarily say he's had a bad string of losses. It's just like the fight against Robbie. A lot of people arguably thought he should have won.
Yep. Oh, that was super competitive.
And that was a war.
It was such a war. But then he lost, you know, like, was it like two or three after? And they were all kind of similar, and none of them were Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, he lost to Damian Maya, he lost to Neil Magny, and then he lost to Chiesa and Alex Oliveira, which I would say is the most unassuming, because, Alex Oliveira is tough, but with Condit's resume and his skill set, like, I just didn't see that a fight that he should be losing. I think the Court McGee, I'm just happy that the UFC kind of knows where Condit is in his career, and they're not feeding him like top 10 killers anymore and trying to kind of like build him up a little more if they can do that.
Yeah, because I mean, at least for now, you need to not be viewing Condit as a top 10 potential title contender, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Also on the main card, we've got Jermaine Durandamy versus Juliana Pena. Juliana Pena, I don't think we've seen her fight in quite some time. Jermaine Durandamy is coming off that loss to Amanda Nunes for the championship belt.
Yep.
What do you think?
Honestly, I guess maybe, I guess I'll go with Jermaine Durandamy, but I don't have a ton of thoughts about that one way or the other.
Yeah, fair enough. I think the last time we saw Juliana Pena was last year. She won against Nico Montano. Before that, she lost to Valentina Shevchenko by submission. So we really haven't seen her in quite a while. I mean, the Valentina fight was 2017, one fight in 2019, and now here she is in 2020 fighting. So, I mean, if she can stay injury-free, and I think if she can take Durandamy down to the ground, kind of what Nunes did, it'll be easy night for Pena since she's more of a ground fighter. But if not, Durandamy smokes her on the feet.
Well, that's kind of my thing too. Is like, I didn't even realize that Pena was still fighting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's tough to bet on her when Durandamy's been so active. Plus, too, Durandamy's just fucking good.
100%, man. I mean, she's been fighting for a long time. The Dutch kickboxing. She kind of looks like Alistair Overeem's little sister. She's a tough bitch. We also, and I mean that in a good way.
Well said. Okay, well said, Bruno.
Yeah. I mean that in the best way possible. Co-main event, which is pretty great. We have Jorgen De Castro, another local talent that's in the UFC, fighting Carlos Felipe. Jorgen coming off a loss to Greg Hardy on Fight Island, and Charles Felipe, I don't know much about him, but he's also coming off a loss to Sergey Spivak. I couldn't really tell you anything about the two of these guys, but for the sake of the hometown hero, I'm really pushing for Jorgen in the co-main event of this one.
But yeah, I mean, me too. I mean, Jorgen actually used to be one of the fighters I coached.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to, you know, I will always like be pro-Jorgen.
Hell yeah.
And also, too, he's been awesome at heavyweight. I mean, I think he would have beaten Hardy had he not broken his foot in the second round. I think he's definitely sort of found his stride at heavyweight, and I'm, you know, pumped to see how far he can take it.
100%. I thought he looked really good in the fight before that. He fought that Samoan guy out of City Kickboxing, Junior Tafa is his name. And Junior Tafa's, I mean, from his last fight against Juan Adams, like, you can tell that he's also a game heavyweight. And he fucking absolutely, under pressure in the own guy's backyard, he knocked him out. And I think that on a good night, injury-free, Jorgen takes it home.
Absolutely. I mean, he just, he has the power in both of his hands. In that heavyweight, guys just can't really hold up to it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And then in the main event, we've got Holly Holm against Irene Aldana. So this is a, I believe, women's bantamweight contender fight. I mean, at this stage, it's kind of hard. I think there are – Irene Aldana is not really a household name yet, but she's coming off a KO win against Ketlin Vieira, who's a big prospect at bantamweight. Yep. Holly Holm, I mean, everyone knows, is a former bantamweight UFC champion when she beats Ronda Rousey in impressive fashion, also in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm going with Aldana in this fight. I mean, Holm just seems to, barring the fight with Ronda Rousey and a couple others, just does, like, just enough to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, she doesn't really hurt you or seem to, you know, and so it's, I don't know, it's tough to bet on her, you know, at least in my opinion at this point in her career. So, I feel like we are always sold that Holly is one of the best out there. And I'm not even saying she isn't. But, you know, and yeah, she's fought everybody out there. But frankly, she always seems to lose.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, I'll have to side with you on that one. I think Aldana's the up-and-coming prospect. She's from her last fight against Ketlin Vieira. She shows that she's got power in her hands. I think she's the younger, hungrier fighter. Holmes just kind of holding on to her career with fights like this. And overall, I'm going to pick Aldana to win that fight.
Yep, likewise.
Awesome, man. Well, it was a pleasure speaking to you today. It was nice to catch up on the fights. Hope everyone enjoyed. Tune in for the fights this weekend. And hope to talk to you guys again. Bye.